B-Pod Studios.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
Oh, Kath, you're going to love this story.
Okay.
Several employees of a pharmaceutical company have been arrested in Indonesia for allegedly washing and reselling used COVID nasal swab test kits. I thought of you immediately when I saw this story. Up to 9,000 passengers at an airport in Medan may have been tested with reused swab sticks, according to police.
Oh, God. God, that's awful.
State-owned
hey,
company.
Look, you got a loogie on this one.
State-owned company Kamiya Pharma is now reportedly facing a potential lawsuit launched on behalf of the travelers. COVID nasal swab testing has become routine in many countries hit by the global pandemic. Police said that they believe the scam had been happening since last December at Kuala Lumpur Airport in Medan, North Sumatra.
Are they at least cheaper?
Passengers are required to have a negative test if they want to fly, and the airport offers the option of getting the swabs done on site. Jeez. Airport authorities used antigen rapid test kits supplied by Kamiya Pharma. Following the complaints from passengers that they had received false positive test results, police sent an undercover officer to pose as a passenger last week when he was swabbed and received a positive test result. Other officers swooped in and raided the test site where they found they had used test kits that had been recycled.
Jeez.
Last week, five Kamiya Pharma employees, including the company's Medan manager, were arrested. The suspects were accused of breaking health and consumer laws by washing nasal swab sticks and repackaging them for sale.
What's worse, pre-used nasal or pre-used anal?
Oh.
Because they do have anal swabs.
I'd say the nasal for some reason. Local media said authorities have compiled reports from 23 witnesses and are investigating whether the profit, if the profit from the scam was used to fund the construction of a lavish house for one of the suspects.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
Hey, got a great house out of it.
Mm-hmm. A Barnesville, Minnesota woman is accused of disrupting the graveside funeral services of her ex-boyfriend and recklessly driving an SUV through a Fargo cemetery. Blair Witten faces one count of misdemeanor reckless endangerment stemming from an incident on Saturday at Riverside Cemetery. Several members of the public flagged down officers and said that a vehicle had been driving over grave sites and trying to run people over.
Whee! That's what I get to do!
An officer detained a female driver on the north side of the cemetery. She later identifies herself as Witten. Witten told police that she had shown up for her ex-boyfriend's funeral and was sitting in the car at the cemetery when people approached her vehicle. She told police that she thought the people would hurt her, so she drove off, being careful not to hit anything.
That's very conscientious of her.
The father of the deceased told police he witnessed Witten, who he said was not wanted at the funeral, driving an SUV at high speeds across the cemetery. Another witness told police that he was approaching Witten's parked vehicle after the burial to ask her to leave when Witten accelerated toward him, causing him to jump out of the way. The witness said Witten was not welcome at the funeral because she had made harassing posts on social media about her ex-boyfriend's death. So she's just a lovely gal.
We don't want you here.
Witten was arrested and taken to the county jail. A woman was found alive in Diamond Fork Canyon in Utah on Monday after she was reported missing for 5 months.
Jesus!
On November 25th, officials found a car in the parking lot of a campground. Along with the car, officials found camping equipment and information that led them to identify the person who was camping there. A search of the area was then performed by Utah County Sheriff's Office, detectives, and search and rescue team, but no one was found. Police had telephone information that led investigators to believe that she could be in Colorado. Then they impounded the woman's car and camping equipment, and they believed that they were abandoned. But over the next several months, they attempted to identify and contact the woman's family, but they were unsuccessful. Deputies then contacted the woman's co-workers and received information that suggested struggle with mental health. And on Thursday, May 2nd, a sergeant returned to Diamond Fork with a aerial search organization in an attempt to find evidence that suggested the woman still might be in the area. So they deployed a drone to search for evidence. The drone crashed. The drone pilot then set out a search for the drone. As they searched for the drone, The sergeant and the drone pilot spotted a tent nearby, and at that moment, the zipper of the tent opened, and the 47-year-old woman who had been missing since November appeared. The woman had willingly chosen to remain in the area since November of 2020.
So she went off the grid.
Yeah.
And she was able to live on the baked beans and her flashlight.
And this is out in, you know,
in the right west, territory.
In the heart of the winter.
Yeah.
The woman told search and rescue officials that she foraged for moss and grass to survive.
Well, she's incredibly resourceful then.
And had access to water supply via a nearby river.
What was her physical condition like? Was she gaunt?
You know what? I don't know. After the woman was found, deputies took her to a local hospital for a mental health evaluation.
5 months.
In a news release, the CSO stressed that the woman did not break the law, saying, but we want to be clear that while many people might choose to not live in the circumstances and conditions this woman did, she did nothing against the law.
I broke my drone.
And in the future, she might choose to return to the same area. She's lucky she did. A lot of times, water supplies out there can have a bacteria
yes.
in it that can make
yeah.
you sick.
Absolutely.
So she's lucky that didn't
sick.
Happen. Yeah, she's going to be real sick.
I was at the scene and she had water that could have made her sick.
All right, and then one last story. A woman faces charges after state police reported she assaulted someone with billiard balls, cue sticks, cookie sheets, and a DVD player.
I keep the same stuff in my car.
According to the report, 18-year-old Jamie Detweiler got involved in the physical altercation around 2:30 a.m. Through the course of the investigation, police discovered that she caused bodily injury to the victim after throwing billiard balls at their head and then hitting them across the back with a cue stick.
That should get it done.
Detweiler then reportedly struck the victim in the head with a cookie sheet and a DVD player before threatening them with a loaded rifle and a knife. How much? What else does she have?
Come on! What is? Are they all in like weapons racks too? Like right, the DVD players next to the billiard balls.
Police report that she also caused moderate damage to the victim's property.
Choose your weapon. I'll go with the DVD player.
Detweiler was taken into custody and placed in the county jail until her arraignment.
93.3 WMMR audio on demand. It's the Bizarre File podcast.
This is a hilarious story. So this is out of Canada. The city of Abbotsford is investigating after residents witnessed large pillows of foam floating in a local creek. And by the way, these are huge. It's like if you were at a foam party, it's like, you know, 8-10 foot tall, big billows of foam. And it was in a local creek and it happened a few days after laundry detergent was spread on the rooftops of a nearby townhouse complex. Officials with the province's Ministry of Environment said that they are monitoring the situation, but confirm the substance causing all the foam is Tide powdered detergent. Using laundry detergent to deter moss from going on roofs is a remedy easily found through an online search, but it also comes with warnings that the technique can be dangerous, damage roofs, and potentially the environment. Health Canada regulates pesticides in Canada. Tide laundry detergent does not specify on its label that it can be used as an herbicide or herbicide. Detergents contain surfactants and bleaches to break up stains that otherwise wouldn't dissolve in water, according to the ingredient listing. Now, an environmental scientist and analytical chemist who works in the cannabis industry had first seen a contractor applying what looked like detergent powder to the roofs of his complex on Monday. He and other residents saw some of the detergent blow off of the roofs and end up in residents' yards and gardens. And he said some of the people at least said one dog suffered irritation from the detergent. He and other residents brought their concerns to the council before the foam started to appear on Friday morning following rain on Thursday. After the foam was reported, the city of Abbotsford sent crews in to inspect the creek. The city's bylaw department is also investigating, but has not said whether there will be any penalties to the contractor or to the company Strata for using the detergent. But it's hilarious.
It's pretty wild. Have you ever seen when, like, a natural lake foam forms?
I've seen in small areas, not like lots of it.
Like, it's huge.
Almost like sea foam type of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, this was detergent.
Foam.
The York County Police said two partygoers were severely injured after they fell off of a mattress that was being pulled by a truck in Manheim Township early Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Police said that they were called at about 2:54 a.m. Sunday and found a 26-year-old woman with a major head injury and a 24-year-old man with leg injuries. A medical helicopter had to be summoned, and both were flown to York Hospital.
I know what we could do.
The woman was expected to survive her head injury. The driver of the Chevy Silverado was a 19-year-old man who had a chain hooked up to the back of his pickup truck.
Right.
And he was pulling a box spring and mattress set behind the truck as partygoers rode on the mattress. Hey,
out
the boonies, you got to find something to do, man.
Yeah.
Police said the two fell off when the truck negotiated a curve and both struck a road sign. When officers arrived, no vehicle was present at the scene, but through interviews, police were directed to a residence where a party was being held.
I feel great.
Police said the driver had returned to the party after leaving the scene. There, police said people at the party threw the box spring and mattress onto a bonfire.
It's hell of a party.
They're getting rid of the evidence, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, unfortunately, I mean, she had major head trauma, so hopefully she'll be all right. Romanian police will investigate a possible poaching case involving an Austrian prince who is reported to have wrongly killed a massive male bear in a trophy hunt on a visit to the county's Carpathian Mountains in March.
Son of a bitch.
Official hunting documents confirm that Prince Emmanuel von Und zu Liechtenstein was granted a 4-day hunting permit in Romanian's Covasna County, and that on March 13th, he had harvested a 17-year-old brown bear for which he allegedly paid the pricey sum of about $8,500. An investigation of the case was launched, and poaching is one of the suspicions in the case.
Yes, I'm the attorney for the bear, and I'd like to talk to you.
Some official papers that are required after a bear killing are missing. Switzerland's Blick newspaper.
Yes, Blick, I'd like to talk to them.
Quoted the prince as saying that he wouldn't comment on the matter. But
I'm not talking to Blick.
Agent Green, an environmental non-governmental organization that monitored the large male bear they called Arthur for 9 years, says it lived deep in the wild and had no contact with human settlements.
I come out one freaking time.
By the way, Romania officially banned trophy hunting in 2016, but hunting permits for problematic bears, ones that damage things or are dangerous,
or make unwise investments,
can be issued to hunting associations, but only as a last resort after relocation measures fail. So they're investigating this guy. All right. So here, I don't know if this belongs in the bizarre file or not.
Go for it.
It's in Cape May County, and it's interesting. So when a seafood processor tried to replace human clam shuckers with mechanical systems, the result was melted ceiling tiles and light fixtures.
So the mechanical shuckers are not the way to go?
Exactly. And I just like the word shuckers.
Shuckers.
So that's why I left this in here. But now Cape May Foods is suing two local firms hired to design, manufacture, and install a ventilation system meant to remove heat generated by the infrared-based shucking system.
The Shuckmatic 5000.
Cape May Foods, I think actually it has a funny name to it. So the Cape May Foods has relied on human shuckers for more than 60 years. Last year, the firm sought to switch to infra-shrucker.
Infra-shrucker.
Infra-shucker. An infrared system that mechanically opens the clam shells and efficiently detaches clam meat from its shell. STS Sheet Metal Incorporated and Captive Air Incorporated installed the ventilation system. That's when you turn it on. That's what it sounds like. In March of 2020 and had its test run about two months later. It reportedly did not go well. Within minutes of the start of the test, the exhaust system failed to ventilate the heat produced by the infra shucker.
Doesn't that seem like a pretty precise thing to do for a machine? I mean,
yeah.
I know machines can be precise, but how would you even do that?
Well, the immediate...
shucking goes.
I'll explain a little bit how it works. So the immediate and dramatic increase to the temperature inside the clam processing room caused the ceiling tiles and light fixtures to melt, and the fire suppression sprinkler systems activated because of the
inability... damn shucking system's too hot!
...of the system to exhaust heat from the processing room. The suit claims the exhaust system could not handle the heat that the shucking system generated.
It's your stupid shucker.
So the infra shucker uses direct infrared heat to separate meat from the clamshell.
How?
The traditional process involves people using shucking knives
right.
to open and empty the clams.
So,
but this uses infrared heat. Somehow or another, the heat. I don't know if it causes it to open up or whatever.
I would love to see how that works, how the infra shucker works.
Infra shucker. We can look that up and see if maybe there's a demonstration of how it works
if the infrared heat causes it to pop open and the meat to... yes, please.
That's a good question. All right, and that is... I'm glad I left that in.
Yeah,
that is all I have in the Bizarre File for you.
Thanks for listening to Preston and Steve's Bizarre File podcast. Go to PrestonandSteve.com, click On Demand for full show podcasts, and to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.